Hour number three on this Tuesday afternoon. Darren, Donnie, and Chase live here at Pete and Terry's Tavern. Bridgestone Arena tonight, Predators and Anaheim Ducks. 7 o'clock puck drop, pregame at 6. Everything heard right here on ESPN 102.5. The game, Mitch Light, Athlon Sports, also Vanderbilt sideline reporter. Before we get into the hot and heavy college football topics, you want to weigh in on what the spread would be if one Wiley DeNuke was under center on Saturday versus Arkansas. So you do not agree with our conversation.
I would bet on Arkansas.
What?
And I have the utmost respect for Willie's athletic
what would
ability
be the
as
points?
A former two sport.
To lose the game? Like Alabama loses the game
yes.
with Willie
if
as Willie's quarterback?
If Willie's a quarterback for Alabama, Arkansas would beat Alabama.
Wow, this is deflating.
The question is, would I be in the hospital at the end of the game? I mean,
well, yeah,
I would get I lit
you,
up by somebody.
Hand it off, throw screens, just get out of the way, man.
Yeah, then throw five
interceptions. I'm not the biggest John Chavis fan, but I think he'd figure out the game plan with Willie Donning at quarterback.
You think Chief could game plan Willie?
I think. He might harken back to some of the old Woody teams from the late 90s offenses and take out that game plan again.
The first thing he would say would be like, this guy's how old? 48?
Are we playing BYU? What is going on?
This guy's been on a mission for the last 25 years.
Speaking of which, and not to get too far down a rabbit hole, I was looking up because BYU started a freshman quarterback. Romney was his last name, and he might even be a Mitt Romney relative, whatever. But I was looking. He graduated high school. I wanted to see what kind. You know, a lot of times when there's a freshman at a school like that I'm not familiar with, I look up their recruiting rankings to see how highly they're recruited. He was in the class of 2015.
Yeah.
And he's a freshman.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I know you got your two-year mission. We could have been a redshirt there. So, it really, I mean, he's going to be, you know, 26 20s. when he's done with college. So.
I had an interesting discussion with Kevin Dyson.
Aren't
about
all of
that.
Your discussions interesting, Willie?
The ones I bring to the table for on air.
Yeah, okay.
At least I would like to think so. But Kevin Dyson grew up in Utah, and he played at the University of Utah. But I asked him about that. I was like, is it a big advantage? You know, shouldn't it be? In theory, I would think if I were playing college basketball at 24 or 25, I was a much better player then than when I was 18 or 19.
Just physically.
But he said,
more developed.
You got to remember, though, they go away for 2 years and they don't play at all. They're not weight training. They're not practicing.
Their diets aren't great.
Yeah, they're off who knows where on this mission. So I guess for some people they can come back and do well, but for others they don't. That's why they don't win the national championship every year.
No, their players aren't as good. I mean, I would think it's a positive, though.
You think overall it's a positive?
Yeah. You've got linemen coming back 20 years old. Sure, they might be a little bit out of shape, but it's just natural. You're going to be more physically ready to
mature.
Yeah. You're going to be more mature at 21 than you are at 18. Just think of some teams that Tennessee's forced to – they're starting two true freshmen on the offensive line. Those are high five-star players. They're 2 years older. They're that much more developed. And even though there might be a little bit of a setback from not being around the sport for 2 years.
It probably also depends on the player.
Sure.
Like some players are probably better at jumping back in.
Sure.
Others might be like, I haven't played in a couple of years. Do I really want to play?
And basketball is more of a kind of, I think, riding the bicycle type sport. You know, it's like getting back on the bike and it comes more, your skills come back. Whereas
football
is
a little bit different.
More physical, more demanding physically.
So Tua had surgery on his right ankle. Okay, he is out against Arkansas, which is what I've said is basically a bye week for Alabama. They got two straight off weeks before the big one. They're going to get by no matter who they put under center against Arkansas. Arkansas is horrendous. So everything is going to shift to what does this mean for November 9th? Because that is setting up for the college football game of the year, right? Alabama and LSU in Tuscaloosa. What is your gut? Who people you're talking to? I mean, do you think there's a real shot that Tua he's not able to play for this game? And if so, what does that mean for this game? Can LSU actually walk in there and walk out with a victory?
I would have thought before Tua's injury, you know, 2 weeks to make the prediction, things change, Alabama struggles against Arkansas, you know, weird things can happen. I would have felt good about LSU's chance. I feel good about LSU's chances to win in Tuscaloosa with both teams being completely
healthy.
Yeah. I'm not saying I would have picked them.
Okay.
But I would. I don't.
So with Tua, you could still think LSU could win this game.
Could win the game. I think they're built differently. They don't need to be as perfect. When you're playing 10-7 games or 17-7 games, you need to be perfect to beat Alabama. If you're playing 38, 31 games, there's more possessions, there's more, you can overcome turnovers, you don't have to be as perfect. If Tua's not healthy or Tua's not, if Tua's not playing, I think LSU becomes the clear favorite. We just don't know. If he plays and he's healthy, there's no way any of us know, with an ankle especially, how healthy you are, how much it affects your game. Can you run? Can you move in the pocket? So it's just, we're gonna sit here and speculate for 2 weeks, but I give LSU a great shot to win that game.
How much do you think, and I know this is still a little off, but, I mean, we've already been talking about it all year, the tanking for Tua in Miami. But how much do you think, now this is his other ankle, right? I mean, we know his ankle came into question last year, and they were able to get away with it at the end in the first playoff game, and he looked fine. But then when they went up against Clemson, you know, he was not the same. And obviously we know the outcome of that. And now it's this ankle. How much do you think that is going to be a concern, or will it, that people are going to start going, does he have ankle issues?
This is, you know, just me from the outside, obviously no sort of medical expert or anything like that. I would think that injury, like, that happened on Saturday, someone fell, our zone player, and his ankle bent in a weird way. That's going to happen to anyone. It's not like he has structural issues to his knee like we're talking about, right? Zion Williamson, where the people are wondering long-term, or someone had a shoulder surgery as a freshman and they're still suffering some ill effects from that. I don't see it like that. I think it might be just two fluke incidents. If I'm
just football plays.
If I'm drafting a quarterback, you ask me the list of injuries that I'm okay with, probably ankle injuries. Or, you know, I know people are built differently. Structure of your bones and muscles and all that stuff, your tendons, everyone's different. I would not.
So
would
you
not,
don't think he gets labeled when it comes combine time? And
I would think not. I would think not.
Okay.
I guess if I'm Miami, I would prefer to draft a quarterback who's never been hurt, but I don't think it would affect my decision.
Okay. This is a critical, critical game in Ann Arbor on Saturday, right? Or I don't know. You're going to tell us.
It's an important game for Michigan's season this year.
Okay, but what if they lose this game? What does that mean?
It means they have three losses for the year. Jim Harbaugh's not getting fired.
You do not believe any – no way, no how this doesn't do anything?
If they lose, they'd be 5-3. If they go 5-7 and they get blown out and everything, no,
Mitch,
he's not getting fired.
But you know this is not just another –
But this is us talking on sports radio 1,000 miles away. At Michigan, they're not firing. Ward Manuel, the athletic director, is not firing Michigan.
So you but is he
think,
leaving?
So you think they're all just in a bubble and a cocoon that the whole country says that basically Jim Harbaugh doesn't win big games, and they don't hear any of that noise? Like, the whole country is talking
care.
About it, but in Ann Arbor, they're in a bubble, and nobody knows.
I'm not saying that. I think their expectations and the way they look at their program from the interior is not the same way. And I think it's probably at every school. They have their own set of expectations and their own set the way they value their program, and then everyone else does. Just because knuckleheads like us at Athlon Sports picking to make the college football playoff and they don't make it, maybe Ward Manuel, maybe at Michigan, they did not have those same expectations. And I'm not sitting here saying that Michigan doesn't expect to win championships. Of course they do. But I just, again, I'd be shocked if
he
got
fired. This
is year
5, though, right?
Yeah, I'd be shocked if he got. Now, what Chase just said, if he decides he wants to go back to the NFL or something, That's a whole other story.
Well, all right, I've thrown that out many times. I don't believe he'll get fired. He'll probably just leave. Because at some point, this is going to get weird. I mean, I understand what you're saying, but at some point, it's going to get weird and hairy. If they lose again, especially at home to Notre Dame, this is a huge rivalry game. And this whole narrative that he never wins any of these big games, it's the same thing Notre Dame battles with, right? It's the same narrative for them. They don't ever win the big games.
Big games are the only games that you lose.
But when you go to Michigan,
say about Peyton Manning in college,
but when you go to Michigan and Notre Dame, that's what I'm saying. You don't bring in certain people to beat Air Force and Navy and Illinois and Indiana. Like, they can get coaches to do that. They bring them in to take them to that next level. Fair?
Yeah, and I mean, you could argue that Jim Harbaugh has raised Michigan's profile since taking over from Brady Hoke, that they're consistently more competitive.
Did they have a profile with Brady Hoke?
Let's say they go 8-4 this year and there's no expectations next year and they break through and they win the Big Ten. Like, weird things happen. Tennessee wins its national championship the year after Peyton Manning. It took Tom Osborne a long time to win a national championship at Nebraska. I know we live in a different era, and I think you go back to Bob Stoops at Oklahoma, and there's another Urban Meyer, coaches who won championships in year two. They changed the timeline for all these coaches. So I'm not going to sit here and say Jim Harbaugh is doing a great job. I just I'm not buying into the quote-unquote narrative that he's on the hot seat. I don't see that.
I mean, he's already lost to Penn State. That just happened. And he loses to Ohio State. I mean, I just think at some point, I mean, they can.
You're not going to get me to change my mind. You can.
I know, but I mean, you can't just keep acting like there's nothing to see here if you're Michigan. I mean, there's no way.
They're 5-2 right now.
They don't hire and pay Jim Harbaugh what they did to keep losing to Penn State and Ohio State and not ever winning a conference. Forget getting to the playoffs. They haven't won a conference.
They beat Penn State 42-7 last year.
Okay.
I just say they never. Is that not a big game?
Yeah.
Okay. But we don't talk about that because we don't win big games, but we won that game.
This is this year.
And
this
you said he never wins big games.
Was Penn State ranked last year that game?
Yeah, no. 17.
Last year?
Yeah, I'm looking right at College Football Reference.
I think, to be fair, they've won some games that you would have to say are big. Like the year that Penn State almost was in the playoffs, they got throttled by Michigan. I think the knock is the big games on the road in particular.
Right.
They've struggled a lot, and they have not been. In fact, just the way they battled back and had a chance to tie the game was fairly significant because they've had a lot of lopsided losses against in the big games on the road.
I mean, yeah, they went to Wisconsin and just got chewed up and spit out this year, and Wisconsin just lost to Illinois.
He's 29-11 in the Big Ten. That's pretty good. Playing in the Big Ten East with Michigan State's being at a program high with Ohio State. With Penn State, I think that's he went 6-2, 7-2, 5-4, 8-1. He's 3-2 this year. You think he should be fired?
It's not a matter of what I think.
Well, you asked me my opinion. I said no.
You're asking me, do I think he's doing as great of a job as you're painting?
I'm not saying he's doing as great of a job. You asked me if he should get fired,
but
I said no.
Let's put yourself in the shoes of a diehard Michigan fan. The choice is: do you make noise and say we want somebody else? Because you're already because
all your other choices
invested,
have been great.
You have a lot of invested money in Harbaugh. You know what the school would have to pay to get rid of him if you really wanted to get rid of him. And then who's the alternative?
See, now here's something.
Who would you rather have? I think that's where if you're realistic, you say we can't make a move here.
Well, I'm going to give you a point, okay? Because this is going to be a point for you.
I don't need any points from you.
Well, I'm going to give you one anyway, whether you're going to take it or not. Brady Hoke and Rich Rodriguez. I mean, they can throw. You can throw back in my lap. Well, okay, well, great.
That's why I said
you're gonna trust those people to go make a better hire.
That's why I said they raised Jim Harbaugh. Don't think he's achieved what you think is possible there, he has raised the level of play at Michigan in his 4+ seasons there. They are better than they were in the previous 5 seasons.
Why don't you think he's been able to get the quarterback? That position,
literally,
like that is supposed to be
really
his specialty. And why has it been I mean, I don't want to say an epic failure, but it hasn't worked to the level that everybody thought.
Yeah, and literally before I came over here, I was doing a radio show in Omaha, Nebraska. We were talking about the exact same thing about Miami's struggles, and I just said, you know what? It's the quarterback position. When you have when you don't have the right quarterback, you have to be so good elsewhere. You know, your margin for error isn't as great. Same thing at Michigan. His best season of quarterback play was probably Jake Rudock, the grad transfer from Iowa, I think, in year two. Shea Patterson seemed like the ideal fit there, or maybe not fit for the scheme at the time, but fit for this scheme. He was, you know, maybe a little misevaluated. I don't know. That has been a big problem. At Stanford, he got Andrew Luck. That was a huge recruiting coup. And Andrew Luck, obviously one of the best college quarterbacks we've seen. But that is a look at Ohio State. Ohio State has had, off the top of my head, good quarterback play pretty much every year in the past 8 to 10 years. Different styles, different guys, some better than the other. Quarterback has never been a weakness at Ohio State in this recent run. It has not been a strength at Michigan, except maybe Rudock was second team all conference that year.
Right, and it's not like Ohio State's been pumping number one picks, you know, in the draft from the quarterback position.
Right. Right.
Most of their quarterbacks that have been very successful until Haskins this year aren't even getting drafted, right? Or at least changing positions,
yeah,
they're not even,
right.
You know, so.
I mean, I'm just looking through 2017, John O'Korn, Brandon Peters, who's now the quarterback at Illinois, Wilton Spate, who transferred to UCLA, 2018, Shea Patterson. Now, they like Dylan McCaffrey, the sophomore who got hurt earlier this year, but, you know, they thought Shea Patterson was going to be good as well. So, you know, Wilton Spate. 2015 was, Shane Morris, who ended up finishing his career at Central Michigan. So it's not like these guys haven't been highly recruited.
Right. All right, we will come back on the other side. We'll talk about Vanderbilt's big win. There's also some big games in the conference. A lot more to get into on the college football side. Mitch Light, Athlon Sports, here at the table with us. That's all next on Darren, Donnick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Hanging out at Pete and Terry's Tavern on the Sobro side of Bridgestone Arena. Tonight, it's the Predators and the Anaheim Ducks. We'll have more on that game a little bit later. If you missed our interview with David Poile, you can go to thegamenashville.com and check it out. And always remember, you can come by and have lunch with us. And we've got the lunch special going on. And it is a burger.
And a beer.
And a beer.
$12.50.
Pretty good deal. Mitch Light is here with us, talking college football. He is with Athlon Sports, also Vanderbilt sideline announcer. And Mitch, I think even the most optimistic of Vanderbilt fans, and I mean there are some that are unbelievably optimistic based on everything we've seen. I think even those people were shocked at how well they played against Missouri, a team that had scored, 30 or more points in 11 straight games, a nation high, right? Nobody does.
Even
the Oklahomas have not had 30 or more in 11 straight. And Vanderbilt held them to 14. There were just so many things that were eye-popping about that game. How did they do it?
Yeah, and the one thing about the scoring the 21 points, seven of them were set up by an interception down to the two-yard line, literally.
The first pass by Riley Neal.
Yeah, so basically the defense gave up 14 points, and that's the most surprising. If you would have told me that Vanderbilt would have, even with the offensive struggles, really, that Vanderbilt would have won this game, I'd probably say 31-28, weird special team stuff, defensive scores. Did not see a defensive battle like this. Yeah, and based on what we had seen before this season, not just the UNLV game, pretty much every other game, just the lack of competitiveness, that's what made this game that surprising. Missouri, I had my questions about Missouri. People after Georgia losing and Florida losing, people were saying maybe Missouri's the team to beat. Or I thought Missouri before the season was the third best team in the East. I still think they're probably the third best team in the East. They had played six straight home games or five straight after that Wyoming game. The best team they had played was South Carolina. So they still had a lot to prove going on the road and clearly didn't handle it well. Obviously, I'm talking from the Missouri standpoint. Probably didn't think they'd be in a quote-unquote dogfight early on and didn't handle it well. I thought Vanderbilt's defensive line, which was shorthanded, Davion Davis, true freshman nose guard who started the last two games, was out with an injury. So they were shorthanded. I thought Vanderbilt's defense controlled Missouri's offensive line, got in as much pressure on Kelly Bryant as Vanderbilt has gotten on a quarterback in recent memory, and then offensively, a lot of credit to Mo Hassan. I know he went out with an injury, but he just looked calm in there, and he added that dimension that this offense has not had, the running quarterback. I thought this year, what you lose in Kyle Shermer's passing, I thought that whether it be Riley Neal or Deuce Wallace running the ball would kind of balance that to some degree. Well, we haven't really seen that from those two guys. So Mo Hassan adds the running element, and you can say he's not as good of a passer. We don't really know that yet. He did hit Kalijah Lipscomb on one deep ball, but it's not like Vanderbilt was throwing the deep ball either anyway with those guys. So, and Keyshawn Vaughn continues to – his numbers aren't as eye-popping as last year, but he's probably having a better all-around season.
I agree. The tough yards that he got late where they basically milked
six
the clock.
Six-plus minutes.
Yeah.
In a seven-point
lead.
That
was impressive. Yeah. And that doesn't show up necessarily in big eye-popping numbers. He had the great screen pass. He's still a home run hitter. But the way he can accelerate, carry tacklers forward, if I'm a pro scout, I have to like a lot of what I'm seeing.
And I've talked to a lot of Jerry Gadowski about this, the offensive coordinator, just how much more of a complete back he is. And that was, fans sometimes would complain last year about him not being on the field some, and some of those complaints were valid, but a lot of them had to do with his other issues, not just running the ball. He's out there pretty much every down unless he needs a blow. Pass protection, like you said, he can catch the ball. We've seen him do that. So, just a really good overall performance by Vanderbilt. Again, you like the way they closed the game. Getting stops in the fourth quarter, forcing a long field goal with two sacks, and then running out the last 6 minutes of the clock. So just and give that staff a ton of credit. I was in the locker room after the UNLV game. If you would have told me that that group of guys right there was going to come out and play its best game of the season, I wouldn't have believed it.
There were so many games where they couldn't cover anybody, they couldn't stop the run. There were a number of plays, as I go back in my mind through the game, where Kelly Bryant, a mobile quarterback, is running around. He had enough time looking down the field and just could not find anybody. So where did the coverage, where did the speed, they seemed like they were flying to the ball a lot better. How did the light go on there?
Good question. I will say there was
it looked like a totally different team.
There was a much better energy from the team from the get-go. And that's one thing that Joe Fisher comes down to me early in the game to ask me, because it's one thing you can sense down there, you know. And there was just, sometimes it's forced, sometimes it's not. There was, like, legitimate energy on the sidelines there. And then I think just it took a couple stops early to get some confidence. Interesting thing about Missouri, and one thing, when they came into the league, and before we knew they were going to be pretty good, those 2 years they went back-to-back, from being on the sidelines, one thing I noticed is how good-looking their wide receivers were. They used to have these big, tall, 6'2", 6'3", wide receivers, real physical specimens. Whatever. So I noticed, and I said this. I said this on the broadcast to Joe. You know, they've got a good offense, but you look at their wide receivers, like Jonathan Johnson's a pretty big dude. But other than that, they're more of the 5'11", 5'10", quicker guys. So I don't know if that had anything to do with the matchup there, but I did notice that Missouri's a good running team. They've got good running backs. I don't think they're as good at wide receiver as they've been, but I can't, you know, I'd love to, you know, give some truth serum to the defensive staff and ask them if it was just effort, if they did different things. But you're right. Their coverage was a lot better.
Let's go around the league a little bit. Auburn is at LSU. I know a lot of people are really looking forward, as we talked about in the first segment, about LSU against Alabama. Is this the classic look-ahead game? I see LSU as a double-digit favorite. I see Auburn as a team that is dangerous, though. Am I crazy to think that they could go down there and win?
LSU and Alabama are both off before their big game, right? Both are off?
Yes. Yeah, okay.
So there's a week in between what I'm thinking. It's not the next Saturday, but still,
Let me confirm that. LSU plays Auburn, yes, and they're off. So yes.
I feel like this is a good time. I still think it's a good time to play LSU.
Yeah, I think Auburn, I give Auburn a lot of credit. I know Darren is not very fond of the Arkansas football team, basically, from what I've heard on this broadcast.
No.
I thought Arkansas actually would make
Saturday. You know,
you know who that punter was?
Who?
Sam Loy, former Vanderbilt punter.
Oh, really?
He was a starting punter at Vanderbilt his first 2 years. I don't think he got along with the he was highly recruited. He picked Vanderbilt. This is all coming full circle. Michigan was hot after him. Jim Harbaugh, he picked Vanderbilt over Michigan. He was one of the top-rated punters. I don't think he got along
with
Vanderbilt's former special teams coach. He was going to transfer to Colorado, but they ended up at Arkansas, and he's been Arkansas's punter the last few weeks. So I was watching those highlights, and I heard Sam Law is like, I remember that dude. Not a good pass. So I thought Arkansas might make Auburn sweat because despite their struggles, they do have some good skill position players. So I credit Auburn for going on the road and being really businesslike and just
crushed them.
Taking care of business there.
When they have it revved up, they look pretty good. The question probably is, I think you've been saying all year, how much progress has the freshman quarterback made?
Offensive efficiency. And their outstanding running back Whitlow's out, too. Now, they had guys against Arkansas that could make up the difference. I don't know if these other guys are, you know, Cam Martin, some of those guys are good enough against LSU. The thing that I like in this spot for LSU is I think they're a pretty veteran team. I think Joe Burrow, fifth-year guy, some of the receivers, you know, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, the running back. Burrow, if I'm him, I didn't get this far. I didn't pay my dues at Ohio State, go through what I did last year to get this far in my career, to stub my toe the week before the Alabama game. Now, that doesn't mean they're going to win the game, but I don't see them overlooking Auburn in any stretch. I think this is – you're right. If you're Auburn and you could pick a time to play him, you probably would want to pick the week before Alabama. But I have confidence in this LSU team to kind of take care of business.
I'm going to leave this wide open to take where you want to go because I think these two teams have had some really interesting last few weeks. But South Carolina at Tennessee – a big, big swing game for both teams. It's a huge game for South Carolina based on their strength of schedule, the toughness of their schedule. And Tennessee has been showing some signs of progress here. So how do you see
that? Yeah, I can't get a feel for this game. I picked Tennessee outright against Mississippi State a couple weeks ago. I just thought that was a good spot.
Can't get a feel for Tennessee, period.
Yeah, and I would have picked – I picked 10 games against the spread on our website every week, and I had Tennessee down that I was going to pick them to cover. If I knew more about the quarterback situation, if I felt better about the quarterback situation, I would give Tennessee a better chance. And then you think this is a good spot for them, and you think 2 weeks ago, South Carolina goes into Georgia and wins. What is that Georgia defensive line going to do to a young Tennessee offensive line? And if Tennessee's not getting great quarterback play, you don't know if Brandon Maurer is going to play. And even if he does, he's throwing big interceptions. So, gun to my head, I think I'd pick Tennessee in this game, but I don't have a strong feel. Because, again, I think Tennessee, South Carolina defensively can cause some problems for Tennessee up front and force the quarterbacks into making some big mistakes. But I think there's no doubt Tennessee's playing better football right now, despite, you know, Tua going out and all the refereeing controversy and all that. Tennessee played a pretty good game. Did a lot of good things at Alabama last weekend.
Missouri, now after having the thorn, has to go to Kentucky. Where do you see Kentucky right now in their journey? We know they've had the big injuries here. How have they coped with it? They're sitting at 1-4 in the league and 3-4 overall. To get to a bowl game would mean a lot for Kentucky based on what they lost from last year and then the injuries on top of it.
Yeah, I mean, you look at their remaining schedule. They're 3-4, Missouri and Tennessee at home, at Vanderbilt, Tennessee Martin, and Louisville at home. If they can get healthy, they can get on a little bit of a run here, but I don't know if they can get healthy enough. Darren, you might know it. Sawyer Smith, I think, is going to be available this week at quarterback. You would think he's a better option than, you know, Lynn Bowden, who's a great athlete, but, you know, is limited, obviously, at the quarterback position. They were fortunate to beat Arkansas 2 weeks. I like Missouri to get back on track in this game. I just think that they are clearly a better team than they showed up the street last week. I think Kentucky's just offensive limitations are going to be too much to overcome.
And don't forget last year's game, too. They'll be thinking about that. Right? I mean, that was one of the more bizarre games of the year last year, which Kentucky came out on top. I was honestly surprised. I thought Georgia would absolutely destroy them.
I didn't see much of the game. How much of the weather impact do you think?
I mean,
Fromm's numbers were brutal.
But think about, I thought South Carolina's weather was way sloppier, and look at that game. That was, you know, they put up, what, 58 points between the two teams?
Well, Kentucky's been good defensively.
But
it
was no score. When was the first
third quarter?
Third quarter, midway through the third quarter, still no score.
I got home. I think I got home from the Vanderbilt game, and I turned it on. I saw 0-0, and I expected to see the
weather
the one,
delay.
No,
or
the
right.
one by the quarter. It's like, whoa, third quarter.
Yeah.
And then, of course, they're making a big deal about how Kentucky hadn't completed a pass, and then you turn it on, and they complete
so,
a pass.
So
right
let's kick this around before we go to the break. Georgia, where they sit right
That's
now.
That's kind of where I was going.
I mean,
like,
it's really
are
interesting.
They?
They had the game against South Carolina was the classic. They got stuck. They got nervous at home. The crowd was
That's
nervous.
That's almost better to be on the road in that game.
Exactly. I thought they just never got the switch on. And then something freakish would happen, and the kid made some great plays in the defensive secondary. I mean, everything that could have gone wrong went wrong. They didn't bounce back the way I thought, but there's got to be something better there.
All right,
let's talk about Georgia
and some other ones on the other side. More with Mitch Light from Athlon Sports, also Vanderbilt sideline reporter. Next on Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
We're back here, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Darren, Donick, and Chase, Mitch Light from Athlon Sports, is hanging out with us as he does every Tuesday at noon here at Pete and Terry's Tavern at Bridgestone Arena. So the question was asked, and we were all going to expand upon Georgia and what we think about the Georgia Bulldogs right now. I'll start and say I guess the last 2 weeks is showing us maybe they're a little overrated.
Yeah, but you know what? Wouldn't we all say that we've been thinking that about Florida all year? And
yeah.
Now
I think Georgia's in a different – I view Georgia differently because I viewed Georgia as
– You did see them firsthand.
Right, as one of the elite teams, which they should have been to start the season. You know, you had your – Clemson, Alabama, that upper Oklahoma. About the 3 or 4 week mark, we saw about six teams separate themselves, we thought. And Georgia was in that group until they lost. I think I'd go back more than just 2 weeks. The first half of the Tennessee game, they did not, they struggled. And they made some plays at the end of the half to get up, 26-14 and dominated. You know, Notre Dame didn't love the way they closed that game there. So you can poke holes at these. When teams, I say it all the time, when teams are this good, you try and poke holes. What will prevent them from maybe winning a national championship? And I think it's fair to say Georgia, their lack of explosiveness on offense and their conservative nature. Right? They play like Alabama played early in the Nick Saban era, where they're just going to run the ball, they play defense, and they don't mind winning 20-10. Well, LSU and Alabama, they love winning 42-20, and they're just more dynamic offensively. Now, Georgia's limited at the wide receiver position. They've got talent, but those guys are young. They don't have the experience there. But I think it's valid to criticize Georgia's just their whole MO, the way they go about it.
Well, I mean, you can bring up the first game because, I mean, Chase and I sat in the stands. Yeah. We weren't blown away by Georgia, but we chalked it up. It's
first
late
game.
August, first game of the season.
Big lead.
And they were way ahead.
Right,
yeah.
Way
lead,
ahead.
Right. Cruise,
right.
Don't show anything.
Yeah, yeah. So we weren't really looking into it too much. But, I mean, if we were just being honest, and I think we said on the show, it's not like we went out there and went, whoa.
And if you saw LSU 3 weeks later on that same field.
Right.
It was a little more of a wow.
Yeah, it was a wow. Wow, yeah. Definitely.
I thought that Georgia, like you guys, had another gear and they would show more, another dimension to their offense. But this would concern me, too, if I'm a pro scout trying to evaluate Jake Fromm, is it's a pretty simple passing game. Most of the plays for a couple years now have been very simple, high percentage passes. And I kept thinking, okay, here's South Carolina. Here's where you need a jolt. You need to come up with another dimension. They're on you, right? They're stopping your stuff. Everybody's getting tight. Break loose. Show me a little diversity in the offense, a little wrinkle here, and nothing. But here, the other thing I am clinging to if I'm a Georgia fan is you lose that game against South Carolina is the letdown of, oh, we lost. We're not going to be undefeated going into it. Are we still going to be able to get to the playoffs, all that stuff? It should rev back up. Right?
Yeah, they have ample opportunity to prove to mentally. Everyone they're the team that we thought they could be.
Yes.
Now, from what we've seen in the past month, are they good enough to run the table? They have to play better. They're good enough, but they have to play better. You know, Florida in 2 weeks, neutral field.
By the way, both are off this week, and then it's the game in Jacksonville.
Yeah.
So right now, like, who would you lean toward today? Because we're not going to see neither one of them until they play each other.
If Florida's at full strength defensively, I might go Florida. But they're banged up on the defensive line, two key guys out. That's going to be...
But they're still finding ways, though.
I know.
They've lost one, but
they didn't
still...
have them in the South Carolina game, and they still...
Right, but yeah. Georgia's... I was going to say Georgia's better than South Carolina, which I still think Georgia is better than South Carolina, but they lost the game. So, you got the LSU-Alabama, and then Georgia-Florida. It's great to see both those teams play. The key is the injuries. You just want to see all those teams at full strength. We've already talked about Tua. Florida's so much better when their defensive line is at full strength. I think I still say, and this isn't being critical of Florida, they're very, very good. In year two under Dan Mullen, they've done great things. They're just not the same team offensively that Alabama is, that LSU is, and Georgia at its best. They're just the offensive line's limited.
But what's interesting is that game down in Jacksonville, Winner is still alive for the whole big picture.
Oh, sure.
Yes. Well, Winner's going to Atlanta.
Well, no, I know. That's not the big picture.
Right, but that's a part of it.
That puts you in the spot to go even further. That's what I'm saying. The winner is alive for the whole shebang.
Now, Georgia still has to play Missouri at home and then at Auburn. Florida after that, they have
their path
at Missouri.
Easier.
But Missouri has owned them. It's like 5-2 since it might be – I think Missouri might be 5-2
has
or something like
that. Owned Florida?
Yes. Look at the recent scores. Yeah. And then they get Florida State at home.
Path is way easier.
Georgia has the bigger hurdle.
Yeah.
But I think if you're the committee, too, and you're looking at both of these teams, I think a loss to LSU definitely looks better for Florida than obviously a loss to South Carolina.
Sure. At LSU, close game versus a home game. But it's not going to matter because the team that wins it, the team that loses is not going to be in contention.
Right.
Like, so that's a good point, but they won't be comparing those two teams.
Yeah, loser goes home.
It's a loser leaves town match. Yep. Okay, so with what you were saying about Florida, injuries, talent, whatever, are we seeing because of how they've played this year, and I'll even say how they played against LSU in the loss, just how good Dan Mullen really is as a head coach?
Yeah, I think so. By the way, it's Florida's – Missouri's 4-3 against Florida in the 7 years Missouri's been in the league, not 5-2. Yeah, but you're preaching to the choir. I've been a Dan Mullen guy since Mississippi State. You look at what he did there. A great offensive coach, can win different styles offensively. Like, this isn't the style he wants to play. He wants more of a running quarterback. I think that's why Felipe Franks, not Kyle Trask, got the job there. So yeah,
are they better with him?
It's hard to argue that they're not. Yeah, I mean, I think they are.
They would be. They're a better team because of that, right?
I think so.
Well, Braden on our morning show, your colleague at Athlon, has been high on the Kyle Trask train for a long time.
It's hard not to
be.
He makes he makes the plays. That LSU game, his toughness. He played great down there. I'm a huge Dan Mullen guy. I think Florida's just going to continue to get better and better. Now, one thing about them is they have not recruited at the elite level that the Georgias and Alabamas and LSUs. You would think they would, and I don't have anyone go look up the 247 numbers or Rivals wherever, but that's not really, Dan Mullen has never been known as the elite recruiter, but it hasn't really mattered. He at Mississippi State, number one in the country. I think they will get players good enough to be a real threat to Georgia in the SEC East over the next, half decade.
I said when I started on this show that I think, before it's all said and done, Dan Mullen will win a national championship at Florida. And I stand by that.
Yeah, I would not be surprised at all. There's more teams than ever, quote-unquote, trying to win a national championship. 15, 20 years ago, I think the list of teams that you'd say could win a national championship was probably a little bit smaller. But now with coaching salaries, facilities, teams, Texas A&M's of the world paying coaches, you know, everyone's making $4 million. But, yeah, I would put my money in the Dan Mullen camp.
And Florida should send a gift basket every year to Chip Kelly. Every single year, a really nice gift basket.
It's crazy how those things work out.
Thanks for saying no.
Thanks for not, you know, not wanting to handle the heat of the SEC East and wanting to go coach in LA.
But before we let you go, I did want to get your. We were talking about Tennessee earlier, but just the thing on the sideline with Garantano and Jeremy Pruitt. What were your thoughts? So, did you think the outrage is warranted, or is that just hard? Coaching.
I don't know how much outrage there is. Like, we sit here and talk and said, everyone's killing Jeremy Pruitt. No, half the people are killing Jeremy Pruitt. Half the people are saying it's no big deal. Like, it just seems that's the way we argue now in the social media world. Your point is arguing against everyone else says this. This is going to be a boring answer. I don't think he should have done it, but I don't really have a problem with it. It's not like, I don't know, do you guys remember Bill Curry? I mean, this is going back, but Bill Curry in the 92 Sugar Bowl at Alabama, he grabbed one of his guys. Basically, he was like, we don't play like Miami plays. Like, Miami was doing some crazy stuff, and Alabama guy taunted, and he grabbed him and whipped it around. It wasn't even close to that. You know, he kind of pulled his hand off. My issue with Pruitt wasn't really that play. I think he needs to calm down.
Lou Holtz used to drag guys off the field.
I think he needs to be almost even less emotional on the side. Like, I think he coaches like a fan sometimes. Going back to that BYU game when he just ripped Alante Taylor. Like, there's in the final plays of a close game. You gotta be the CEO of the program. You let your position coach rip him apart, or you wait till the film session. The way he's just kind of running down the sidelines, it's going crazy. He needs to be more.
It alerted people that, hey, something was up with that play.
Yeah.
And that's when the Jordan Rodgers of the world start looking and sifting through and say, you know what? He went on his own on that play. And then all of a sudden people know what happened.
Right. I mean, there's nothing wrong with being emotional.
Maybe they would have found it anyway, but he certainly called some, hey, something's up.
I just think he needs to be a more. Presidential? Maybe that's not.
Well, I don't know if he's going to. He's a football coach.
Yeah, a big time Division I head football coach. I mean, he's on a huge stage. Do you think this is the beginning of the end for Garantano in Knoxville? That this is kind of the end. It feels that way.
It feels that way. I don't know how a kid bounces back from that. I mean, that was pretty a national, undressing, so to speak.
And yeah,
it's clear he wasn't in the best of graces with that staff to begin with, and. You know, I don't know the update. I've seen some tweets. I don't think we'll know the update on Brandon Maurer until later this week, but that's two concussions. So,
but they have another option. And that,
yeah, was it JT Stroud? You know?
Yeah. I mean, I guess we'll know, right?
Yeah, we'll find out. It's, you know, he's a talented kid that just has been inconsistent and hasn't, you know, there's a disconnect there somewhere between him and the coaching staff.
Joshua has tweeted at all of us and said, as a diehard Michigan fan, I'm not calling for Harbaugh's head, but like you guys said, who do you get at this point for the rest of the season? This conversation will be different next year if it's a similar season. So,
I mean, every year that they don't win, the argument, in my opinion, becomes more valid. But we don't need to rehash that.
Meanwhile, you have Ohio State. People are really on board with that train right now, saying, well, they're better than Clemson. They should be better than Clemson. Like, it doesn't mean anything right now, but the eye test is certainly impressive with Ohio State right now. And it's not as impressive for Clemson as we thought, right?
No doubt. Ohio State has just been completely dominant. Now, Clemson, you know, you can Trevor Lawrence threw two picks or whatever. They still beat a pretty decent Louisville team easily. So I'm not off the Clemson bandwagon. But if you're looking for a team that has been dominant every week, no hiccups, it's Ohio State and LSU, in my opinion, have been the two most impressive teams as far as on-the-field performance. With Alabama right behind them.
Dabo making that kid that got ejected go home with the staff on a bus.
I got to watch my
performance. He did not fly home with the team.
I got to watch my performance in the next road game. If I don't do a good job on the sideline.
Has that ever happened to you?
Joe Fisher's going to make me take a train back to Nashville. I won't be able to go on the team plane.
Good to see you, Mitch. Thanks for doing this.
Can you get a train back? I don't know. It would not be a passenger train.
Can you take a train from Columbia, South Carolina to Nashville? I don't think so.
Not as they say in the Plains Trans Road, not a people's train.
Yeah. Maybe go Amtrak.
Wichita. Mitch Light, Athlon Sports, Vanderbilt sideline reporter. We'll come back, wrap up the third hour of Darren, Donick, and Chase next. Hey, did you know 1.2 million people right here in the U.S. are living or in remission from a blood cancer? Join us, ESPN The Game Nashville, for Light the Night Walk at Nissan Stadium. That'll be Friday, November 1st. It is hard to believe that is just around the corner. Yes, November is just around the corner. We're almost done with another month. And I hope you're a part of this. Difference in saving a life by being a part of the 2019 Light the Night Walk. For more details, be a part of the event, or to contribute, visit lightthenight.org/events/Nashville. Once again, visit the website lightthenight.org/events/Nashville. Just reading where the Kansas City Chiefs have released DeAnthony Thomas, and they have promoted quarterback Kyle Shurmur, which tells us that you-know-who was not going to play against the Packers on Sunday. And as I was having a discussion with somebody earlier this morning about Aaron Rodgers on my fantasy team, who I started last week,
that was good
over Kirk Cousins. And when I the first stat I saw was Kirk Cousins, I'm like, oh, no, he's thrown for over 300 yards and four touchdowns. I played the wrong guy. I didn't know the Packers game at the time.
Yeah.
And then I looked up, I went, oh, I played the right guy. Five touchdowns. Then he ran for one, and he threw for over 400 yards. But I told him, I said, actually, because they were like, well, good for you. That's great that, you know, Mahomes is not going to play. I said, actually, it's not. Like, Kansas City's defense was going to stink no matter whether Mahomes was in there or not. I'd rather have Mahomes in there healthy and have a shootout back and forth,
yeah,
right? You know, 48-45 type of game. With Matt Moore, I don't know. I
mean, who knows?
By the way, Green Bay's favored by, like, what, 4 or 5?
Yeah. And they're supposed
to. It has not been smooth sailing.
Don't they have Chad Henne, too, that has been hurt, and they're supposed to get him back at some
point? But I guess Kyle Shurmur could be the backup on Sunday.
I mean, I don't think there is a could be. I think he
he's going to dress. He's going to dress.
Yeah.
Good for him.
That's good news for him. And I think one of the things that we've learned, and we'll probably get Derek Mason to talk about this, because I'm sure he'll have nothing but glowing things to say about Kyle Shurmur. I think you can even appreciate him more with what they've seen from quarterback play this season, just how good he was as a college quarterback. You know, he didn't do everything well. He wasn't an eye-popping, look at these crazy plays he made. Like, he wasn't a runner or anything, but just his smart ability to distribute the ball. He had a very good arm. You know, I think you appreciate how good he was.
Yeah, so good for him.
How many Vanderbilt quarterbacks started two bowl games? I think
that's
zero.
That list is very, very small.
I don't think
it's
anybody.
A list of one.
I don't think anybody. I think he's the only guy.
Right.
Yeah, because
Jordan Rodgers, too. Yeah, he started. He started, too.
That's right, he did.
He sort of – Rodgers split the time with Larry Smith, but he did start
because
2 years in a row.
I think the Franklin's first year when they played Butch Jones in Cincinnati in Memphis.
Jordan Rodgers started that game.
I thought Larry Smith started that game.
No, he came off the bench, I think, and gave him a spark.
And then did Jordan not
Larry
start
Smith
the next year?
Larry Smith started the 2008 Music City Bowl as a freshman against Boston College.
Yep.
So playing into – yeah, so starting to
– okay, but if Jordan Rodgers started against Cincinnati, then they – the next year –
North Carolina State here, he started. He was the full-time starter that year.
And then the next year
– which was the best.
The next year he would have started, too, because they
went
three straight.
No, he graduated that year. That was the Austin Carter Samuels and Patton Robinette combination in 2012.
Yep.
Huh.
That's 13. Okay. 13, but Robinette
13,
started that bowl game.
Yeah.
I forgot about them.
2012, and Max, you could have your argument, but 2012 to me was the best team, the best Vanderbilt team.
Yeah, with I think that's
Zach
fair.
Zach Stacy, Wesley Tate.
Yeah.
But it's the only time you had
Jordan
both receivers.
Matthews. Oh, yeah.
You had
Chris
Matthews.
Boyd.
Yeah, and Boyd.
And, you know, the third guy, who's number seven, I forget.
Jonathan Krause.
Yeah,
17.
Yeah. Played a little bit in the NFL. You had some very good talent up and down the board there.
I know it's still a little early for this, but it's not. It's just around the corner, too. I mean, who's kidding who? College basketball season's about to get underway. I saw this morning. You guys know who the number one team in the land is?
Michigan State?
Yeah, Michigan State. Did you see their news today?
No.
Josh Langford out indefinitely with a foot problem, reevaluated in January.
Ouch.
So I bring that up just because They're the number one team in the land. And maybe Michigan State and Kentucky play early on in the season, too.
You know,
in that bit, was it? Isn't that the big?
Is that the?
Where's the classic at this year? That one where they
on
last
the ship,
year wasn't
on the
it in Chicago? No, no.
Haven't they had some early games?
Yes, they've done that,
and they all get canceled.
They all get canceled
because of moisture on the court.
Oh yeah,
yeah, that's right. What? So where is the one, Max, this year? Last year wasn't it in Chicago, or was it?
Are
Madison
you talking
Square
about
Garden?
An indoor game? I think well, it's. Yeah, I think it's MSG.
It's like where they have, you know, Kentucky well, that's plays like the, Michigan State, Kansas plays Duke.
Yeah,
or
I think
North
it's Carolina. MSG.
Okay.
That's isn't that like the NIT kickoff or something like or tip off or
there's
whatever.
A lot of versions.
No, there's a
of
lot.
The
yeah, there's a yeah. lot.
I lose track. I
yeah.
mean,
but yeah, how about that? Josh Langford out indefinitely for Michigan State, who is coming in as the number one team in the land, will be reevaluated in January. We come back fourth and final hour. We'll head over to West End. We'll talk to Derek Mason. Talk about their big win over Missouri. But first, Willie, you got a word about Lee Company.
Well, let me give you the word from Lee Company, a huge sponsor of Darren's radio coverage, our radio coverage here on 102.5 The Game. Predators and Ducks tonight from Smashville. Coverage starts at 6. Lee Company, big sponsor. And we have used Lee Company in our house. I am always preaching to you about the home maintenance plan. It is a really sound plan. Now, today, may not need air conditioning or heat in your house, at least during the day. But the weather is steadily changing colder. If you haven't had your heating unit checked, that's a great way to jump on board and jumpstart a relationship with Lee Company because they really have a good plan called the home maintenance plan where they call you with annual checkups to make sure before the weather really gets severe, hot or cold, that your heating and air conditioning units are checked to be working properly. And they'll take it a step further and check your plumbing and your electrical systems, make recommendations when needed, and if they have to make repairs, you will get discounts on those repairs. All part of the package of the home maintenance plan. Lee Company, 567-1000, or go online at leecompany.com. Lee Company, use their decades of expertise to help you.